MacCast, Wednesday, March 16th, 2005. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for the MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geek. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. All right, well, a lot has been going on, apparently, because in prepping for the show, I came up with a huge volume of show notes. So got a lot of stuff to cover tonight. I'm going to just jump right into it, and we'll see how it goes. Apple has joined the Blu-ray Disc Association Board of Directors. For those of you who don't know, Blu-ray discs is the next generation of DVDs. It's going to be the one that supports high definition DVDs, which, as everybody knows from the recent release of iLife 05, Apple's buzzword for 2005 is high definition. So they joined the Blu-ray group. Basically, Blu-ray DVD discs are going to hold up to 25 gigabytes of data, and on a double layer disc, it will hold 50 gigabytes of data, which is, that's a huge, vast improvement over the current storage capacity of DVDs, which is 4.7 gigabytes on a single layer DVD, and the new dual layer DVDs store 8.5 gigabytes. So you're getting almost five times the storage capacity on a single layer, which is just amazing. Also on that board of directors with Apple are Dell, Hewlett-Packard, Hitachi, Mitsubishi Electronics, Panasonic, and a bunch of other companies, over 100. The one company you'll notice is missing from there is Microsoft. I believe they are supporting the competing standard, which is HD DVD. And that's the one being developed by Toshiba and NEC. Those are the two big companies backing that format. Microsoft already plans to use that in the next generation Xbox, but we'll just have to wait and see. So here we go again with some format wars. We're going to have to see who wins out. Most of the companies are behind Blu-ray, so I think Apple did a very good job in aligning themselves with that technology. It's probably going to be the one that wins out. If not, we'll probably see something like we see now with the DVD -R and the DVD plus R, where companies come out with drives that support both technologies. Next, there's a rumor floating around the web, and it's being put out by Apple Insider, that Apple plans to increase the standard RAM on all new Macintoshes to 512 megabytes. You guys may remember the PowerBook G4s that were just recently announced in January had their standard RAM upgraded to 512, and Apple Insider is reporting that by mid-year, around the same time that Tiger gets released, Apple will have standardized all new Macintoshes with 512 megabytes of RAM. That's something that they've been needing to do for a really long time, so I'm actually really glad to see that. You know, anybody I recommend who's buying a new Macintosh right now, people ask me how much RAM to get, and I say, you know, you have to upgrade it. That's one of the very first things you need to upgrade. You need at least 512, and the more the better. I firmly believe that the cheapest upgrade and the most the best upgrade you can do for performance of your machine is adding memory. I pretty much max out every new RAM that I every new Macintosh that I purchase. My iBook has 640 megabytes, which is the max it supports, and I wish I could have more. Oh, real quickly, I forgot to mention at the top of the show tonight that I made some slight changes to my setup and how I'm recording. I did some things that make it a little more comfortable for me to record the show. I am a little further back from the microphone, and I upped the gain levels on the mixer a little bit. So if you guys could let me know what you think of the quality or the sound of the show tonight as compared to previous shows, I'd love to hear the feedback on that. Maccast@gmail.com. I'd appreciate it. So here's the next rumor I have for you is a rumor I think we've all been waiting to hear, and one that I really truly hope comes true. Apple Insider is saying they have sources inside Apple that are telling them that Apple is, quote, feverishly working on a two-button optical mouse and that it intends to release that mouse. Can I say thank God, and it's about time? I have been purchasing two-button scroll wheel optical mice for a couple years now. That one-button mouse thing that Apple has held on to for years and years and years, its time has come. It's time for that thing to die. So it's really good news to hear that Apple is working on a Apple-designed two-button mouse, and it better have a scroll wheel. I'll just tell you that right now. But the main reason why they're saying now and why it's taken so long is, you know, Apple's going after switchers. Now that the iPod is successful and made inroads into the Windows market, they're trying to convert over Windows users, bring people over from the PC to use Macintosh, and PC users expect a two-button mouse. They've had two-button mice since, you know, pretty much the beginning, so they just expect to have a two-button mouse, and so Apple really needs to step up and put one out there on their new systems if they truly want the switcher experience to be more comfortable and more seamless, I think, for Windows users. So I really hope this one comes true. We'll just have to wait and see on that. Another part of this rumor is that Apple is updating its AirPort Extreme and AirPort Express products in the next coming months. There's not a lot of details, but one unconfirmed rumor is Apple might be considering putting a optical audio port on the AirPort Express as a standard port. Currently, to get the optical support, you need to buy a add-on kit, which is about $40 to get the optical interface. So it might come standard on the new AirPort Express, which I guess a lot of people are excited about. I have an AirPort Express, and it is a really cool product. I use it for running iTunes through my stereo, and it works just excellent. Unfortunately, the USB printing, the USB print server didn't support my printer, but as soon as I get a new one, I'm sure that feature is going to be a blessing to me too. So if you're looking for a way to pump iTunes into your stereo, or just a way to extend the range of your wireless base station, your AirPort base station, you really might consider looking at an AirPort Express. I like mine a lot. So do you guys know how much Steve Jobs gets paid for being CEO of Apple? If you're a big Mac fan, I'm sure you do. He's had the same salary for the last couple years, and it is $1. That's right, folks. Steve Jobs gets $1 in compensation every year for being CEO of Apple. And, you know, you might be thinking, well, he must get bonuses or other compensation. And a few years ago, that would have been true. But as of March 2003, Steve voluntarily canceled all of his outstanding stock options, excluding those that he receives in compensation for being a director. Now, obviously, we don't have to worry very much about Steve because he is the second largest shareholder at Apple and has over 10 million shares. And as you know, with the current stock price, he's doing just fine. So he basically owns 1.23% of the company in terms of the outstanding share count. And so he's making his money, but each year his annual salary is $1. And I'm sure there's some sort of tax reasons for that, but just an interesting little tidbit about Steve Jobs. So next we have a story that on the MacCast just won't seem to go away, and that's the iTunes Motorola cell phone. We have new information now about the reason why it was delayed. The announcement at the CeBIT conference in Germany was delayed. Turns out that it is a difference of opinion between Microsoft and Motorola on how to release products. Motorola normally announces its products months and months before they go on sale. But Steve Jobs is of the opinion that if you announce a product on Friday, you better be ready to sell it on Monday. So it looks like in this case, Apple won out. So the Motorola iTunes phone, which is called the Rocker, won't be announced or shown off until right before it's sold, just the way Apple likes it. So as you guys know, I'm really excited about OS X Tiger, OS 10.4. It's coming out soon. April 15th is the rumored date, and I can hardly wait for it to get here. Apple announced today that it had seeded the latest build of Tiger 8A41 to its developers, and this build is being rumored to be the last or one of the last builds before OS X goes Gold Master. And for anybody who's not familiar with that term, Gold Master means that that will be the edition that goes out for duplication to be sold in retail. So there are still some known issues with the current build, and the biggest one, I guess, is iDisk syncing problems. And then there are also some issues with the 1.33 gigahertz 14-inch iBooks. which apparently some of them can't boot from the DVD, which is obviously a problem that they're going to have to solve before they do the final release. And then the other thing is apparently there's still some issues with Lexmark Z-Class USB printers. So it's coming. It's on its way. And I can hardly wait. I'm going to be there on the day it releases. Hopefully they're going to do one of their midnight things. I will be there. I just got a new setup for doing mobile podcasting, so I plan to do some recordings from the local Apple store here in San Diego. So hopefully we'll have a little Tiger release party edition of the MacCast. So look forward to that sometime in mid-April. So we announced on the show that Apple had been having problems with the new trackpad on its G4 PowerBooks. It has that new feature where you can use two fingers on the trackpad to do scrolling, and there was some reports that there are a lot of issues with that new feature. Apple has come out and admitted that there is a problem, and they are aware of it. What they're recommending right now is that you just switch back to only doing one finger operation and don't use the two finger method, because it can cause, quote, erratic behavior with your trackpad. If you already have the problem where your trackpad is behaving erratically from using the two-finger method, they mentioned that you can reset the trackpad. What you do is you just place your entire palm over the trackpad and hold it there for 3 or 4 seconds. That should reset it and take care of any erratic behavior. And you can continue to use that if you start to experience erratic behavior again. Apple is working on the issue. They're investigating what is causing the problem and searching out a resolution. So hopefully they'll have some sort of patch or update to fix that problem in the near future. I think a lot of people like the two-finger scrolling feature, and it's too bad that it's really not working. But, you know, as it goes with all new features that are put into a product, occasionally it gets out there and there's some bugs. So you're just going to have to bear with Apple on that one. But at least they are admitting the problem. A lot of people were complaining that Apple doesn't admit when they have issues. And they came out today and actually admitted on this one. And, you know, hopefully they'll have it fixed soon. So let's look forward to that and give them some time to fix that up. So a couple shows ago, we had our first ever MacCast hit test. For those of you who listen to Adam Curry's Daily Source Code, you're familiar that Jan Polet comes on there and does a hit test where he plays music from the 60s, 70s, 80s, little snippets, and Adam tries to guess the artist that's in the snippet. Well, it turns out that Jan Polet's cousin, Jan Toilet, is a huge Mac fan, and he put together a Mac version of the hit test. And on the first edition that we played, we had to guess startup sounds. Well, this recent edition he just sent me, he's telling me, is system sounds. So we're going to play it now. I'm going to try and guess these. Hopefully I get more than I got on the first hit test. So here we go with the second MacCast hit test. If you want all the Mac news, the trolling websites, gives you the blues, you need the MacCast.
Jan Toilet here. I'm the cousin of Jan Polet, and it is time for Adam Christiansen of the MacCast to take the hit test. I've got another Macintosh special hit test for you today. See if you can recognize these audio clips. Here's number one. And one more time. And here's your thinking time.
Oh, man, you guys, that sounds like from OS 9, one of the system sounds. I think it was the menus. When you rolled over the menus, it made those little clicks.
And here's number two. Not sure. And one more time.
Sounds like a cash register at the Apple store. I don't know on that one. Wow.
And here's number three. And one more time.
Okay, this one's OS 10. When you dump something in the trash, it's throwing something into the trash.
Woo-woo! Hi! Now, I hope you got all this right.
Okay, so here we go with the answers.
Number one.
Okay. See, that's the one I think is the menus.
That is the sound of somebody going through the menus on Macintosh OS 8.6. Can you remember the platinum
8.6.
sounds?
Oh, 8.6. I thought it was OS 9. Yeah, I remember those platinum sounds. Okay.
Yes, of course.
I have no idea on this one.
That is the trash sound from Mac OS 9.
I don't remember that trash sound.
Number three. That one is the sound
emptying
of
the trash.
Dave Weiner's address book card on Adam Curry's PowerBook.
Oh, no.
Okay, so
whoa.
I hope you did well with this one. See you next time on the MacCast Hit Test with Jan Toilet.
All right, thanks, Jan. If you want all the Mac news, the trolling websites gives you the blues, you need the MacCast.
www.maccast.com.
On the train or in your car, it doesn't matter where you are, you've got the MacCast. It's the show for Mac geeks. Made by a Mac geek, this is your MacCast.
Your MacCast. All right, thanks, Jan. Appreciate that. Hopefully everybody's enjoying those. Trying to add a little bit of humor here into the MacCast show. Hopefully everybody likes it. We got some pretty good feedback on the last one. So Simon Toon is the friend of the MacCast show that puts those together with us. So thanks again, Simon, for taking the time to put that together. Okay, next I want to kind of make a recommendation to you guys, especially you Mac geeks out there who are gamers or into playing games on your Macintosh. There's a company out there called Freeverse who has supported the Macintosh for a really long time. They've made Mac original games. They do make PC games, or they've ported some of their Mac games over to the PC, but they've been on the Macintosh for a really long time. They make great Mac games. Freeverse.com and the company's called Freeverse. The reason I'm bringing them up is they have a new game called Kill Monty. I haven't had a chance to check it out yet, but I'm sure it's great. They also make other great titles like Burning Monkey Solitaire, which is a really funny solitaire game. I think they're on version 3 of that. They made the game Airburst Extreme, which was extremely popular. A game called Wing Nuts. They make great cards games, Hearts Deluxe, Spades Deluxe, if you're into card games. And if you have an iSight, they have a really cool thing. If you're familiar with that, they have one of these for the Sony PlayStation, but basically it's a bunch of games where you can stand in front of your iSight and use your body to play the game. The camera actually tracks your movements, and you can interact with images on the screen. It kind of sticks you in the game. Really, really cool. A lot of fun to play with if you have an iSight. So check that out, freeverse.com. I can't say enough good things about the games that they put out. A lot of fun. So I had a listener, James, send me an email, and it kind of stumped me a little bit. I had one suggestion for him, but it really didn't work out. James wants to know how to schedule the sending of email using Entourage. Apparently, this is a feature that you can do in Eudora where you can actually queue up mail and then set it on a schedule to be sent later. So you can say, oh, I want this email sent Friday at 5 o'clock, and Eudora will take care of handling that for you. Apparently, there's not a feature like that in Entourage. I pointed him to something called Entourage Scheduling, which is under Tools, Schedules in Entourage if you have it. And it looked like, I don't have a copy of Entourage, so this was kind of hard for me to do, but looked like you could set up different rules to send the email. And James said that that would work, but he would have to set up every time he wanted to send an email, he'd have to set up a rule for that specific email. So I think he's looking more for just something where he can compose emails and then on a scheduled time frame have those sent out. And he wants to do it in an Entourage, so he's looking for an Entourage solution. So if anybody out there knows of something like that or knows of a way to do that using Entourage, please send me an email or an audio comment and let me know so that I can get that answer to James. We have been working for a while now to answer the question from a listener, Lance. He had a Linksys router that was not giving out the DHCP address to his I can't remember if it was a PowerBook or iBook, but basically his laptop with the airport wireless card was not getting the DHCP address from his router. Well, I got an audio response from Neil, and he has another idea about what might be happening.
Hi, Adam. This is Neil. About the Linksys problem, I've had the same problems. My Wi-Fi's failed to work except intermittently, usually on reboots. It's fine. Apparently, the actual issue is that the DHCP server included in the Linksys routers crashes when a wireless device goes in and out of range reasonably quickly. I've done it, and one of my friends who's a network admin has done the same thing, and we figure that the actual DHCP server's crashing, which is why your other device that stays within range finally can't get onto the network when its lease runs out and it tries to renew its lease. But everything works on a restart of the router. So what I've done to deal with it is to turn the wireless off on my Linksys router, stick a Ethernet cable into one of the ports on the back and plug the other end into an Airport Express, which, although I have little security at the moment because I haven't worked that bit out, has given me a fully functioning wireless network because the DHCP works fine as long as it's wired. There you go. Hope that helps. Thanks, Adam. Good job with the backcast. Thank you very much. I really enjoy it. My wife actually listens to it on occasion as well, and she says it's pretty good, so you must be doing something right, man. Catch you later. Bye.
So there you have it. The Neil's thinking that the DHCP server on the router, or router, as he puts it, which I think that's great. I love that. That the DHCP server on the router is actually crashing when the PowerBook or the iBook goes in and out of range, and that's what's causing the issue. He did a workaround and is actually using the airport that he has had available to give out the DHCP address, but it sounds like this is a problem that Linksys is going to need to deal with, so you're going to need to get in contact with Linksys. I have a Linksys wireless G router. Apparently, I think Lance's was a B. I have had no problems or issues with mine, so not really sure what's going on there. Hopefully you can get it resolved, Lance. And thanks, Neil, for giving us that bit of information. So I got an update from a MacCast listener on the Mac Mini VGA issues. Mac Minis seem to be having an issue where when they're connected to a monitor, a VGA monitor, and not through the DVI port on the Mac Mini, that the displays are coming up very dim or having strange artifacts, or there's some sort of issue. And to date, Apple has been not very forthcoming, I guess, with what it is. A lot of people are solving the issue by getting a different DVI to VGA adapter, not using the one that Apple provides with the Mac Minis. I had a listener, Daniel, who ordered a 1.42 gigahertz Mac Mini, and he's connecting it to a 22-inch Dell CRT monitor, which is a Sony Trinitron monitor. Apparently, this issue affects both CRT monitors and flat panels if it's a standard VGA connector on the flat panel. Well, Daniel initially had said he wasn't having problems with his, but it turns out that he is, and he sent me an email to let me know that he called Apple, and Apple said that they are aware of the issue, so they're actually admitting it now, apparently. And that he is saying Apple's telling him the problem is with SVGA or XGA monitors, that it does not affect just plain old VGA monitors, which there aren't very many just VGA monitors out there. I think those are 640 by 480 resolution monitors. And the higher monitors are the SVGA or XVGA monitors. So, and the Apple doesn't currently have a fix, apparently. So Daniel's actually sending back, he was a switcher, and he's sending back his Mac Mini. So sorry to see you go from the Mac world. Hopefully you'll come back when they get the issue fixed, and hopefully Apple will get the issue fixed. Apparently they're aware of it, so I have not been following the forums on this. If anybody out there has more information about this, because this does sound strange that it would only affect SVGA or XGA monitors and not just standard VGAs, the whole thing sounds kind of fishy to me, but if anybody has more information or disagrees with this, please let us know, maccast@gmail.com. Send a audio comment in MP3 format or just an email. And I'd love to hear more information about this. Oh man, you guys, my iBook just started making a really funny noise. Sounds like it's maybe coming from the fan. It's kind of up by the vents. I'm going to put this thing right by the mic, and I want to see if you guys can hear this. Can you guys actually hear that? I think you actually might really be able to hear that on the audio here. Sounds like the fan. Hopefully it's nothing major. I'm going to just keep doing the show. Hopefully I won't be having to take my iBook into the Apple Store to get repairs anytime soon. But you know, I'm hoping maybe when I shut down tonight and start it up tomorrow, it will have gone away. But as long as the iBook's running, the show must go on. So on to the next thing I got here. Let's see. I got another answer from somebody about keeping iTunes library focus when attaching the iPod. Listener David recommends a Apple script called iTunes Viewkeeper, and it's available at Doug's Apple Scripts. There's a link from the show notes to Doug's Apple Scripts. If you haven't been there, this site provides Apple Scripts for all kinds of things. A really great site. But this one Apple Script specifically, you run in iTunes, and it will prevent the focus from shifting from your iTunes music library to your iPod when you connect your iPod. If anybody's ever seen this behavior, I mentioned that it's really annoying to me. If you are listening to your iTunes library or maybe browsing your iTunes library and then you connect your iPod, the minute your iPod mounts, the selection in the left-hand side of iTunes will jump down and your iPod will get selected. And it's annoying because if you don't notice it happening and you just hit play on iTunes, it's actually going to start playing the iTunes off of your iPod. And the one problem with this is that when it works in this mode, the iPod hard drive spins up, but it never spins down. It doesn't do the normal caching that it does. So I've had my iPod get extremely hot because I ran it for several hours when I was at work and didn't notice it was actually running off of the iPod tracks and not my iTunes music library that was on my hard drive. So I think it's a problem. I did try this thing out and it didn't seem to work for me, but if anybody else has had good experience with it, let us know. Next, I have a question from Mike, and this is concerning podcasting. It's actually something I think we all deal with. I have this problem myself. He is wondering about how to keep podcasts organized once you have them in iTunes. And I'm going to play his audio comment and make some comments after.
Hey, Adam. I really like the program, and you got really good insight into what's going on these days. I've been listening to podcasts and my music on my iPod for a while now, since December, and I just don't have a clear way of organizing it all as far as through iPod or X into iTunes and then onto my iPod. How, you know, do you have any suggestions on how to organize it all, the playlists and you know, how things are synced up and how often it does it, if removing podcasts, and I don't know, it's all gotten confusing. I got a bunch of stuff on my iPod and it's not really too organized. So any help from you or listeners would be greatly appreciated. Thanks from Mike in Ventura. Bye.
So Mike, I think this is a common problem for a lot of people. I have this problem myself. I know one solution that a lot of people use, I personally haven't tried it out, is using smart playlists in iTunes. Setting up a playlist for just your podcasts and setting that playlist. So the way you'd set up the smart playlist is you'd tell it, you know, pull in all the show, all the tracks that are of genre podcast, okay? And then also only give me the ones that have not been listened to yet. And then they actually auto-sync that playlist to their iPod. So they always get just podcasts that they haven't listened to. The only dilemma here is that you need to make sure you let iTunes run out the end of that show in order to get count as having been listened to. So they use the play count feature, I guess, of iTunes. So where play count is zero. And in order to get the play count hit, you have to listen all the way through the end of the podcast and let iTunes move on to the next track. The same thing goes with your iPod. So it also works in reverse. If you set up that same smart playlist on your iPod, once you've played out a show, it will actually remove itself from the playlist. Now, as far as managing podcasts in terms of deleting them from iTunes, I have not found a really good way to do that. I personally just do it manually. You know, I delete out old shows that I've listened to, and I just kind of have to keep track in my mind of which ones those were. Again, if you let them play all the way through and move on to the next track, you could check your play count and know which ones you had listened to, and then you're able to delete those off. But as far as deleting, it's just pretty much a manual process, at least for me. So if anybody has a really good tip on managing podcasts on your iPod and in your iTunes library, please let us know. I'd love to get an audio comment on this to play back, but you can also just send text email. All right, we're running a little bit long tonight. We're at 30 minutes, I just noticed. But I have one more thing. The last thing tonight is from Manuel, and he wanted to let people know about an issue he was having. We've talked a couple times about bookmarkable AAC files and how those work great for podcasting, because you can actually stop a podcast, go do other things on your iPod, listen to other music, and when you come back to that podcast, it'll actually pick up from right where you left off. And iPodderX and a lot of other podcatching clients are offering a feature where it'll take the MP3 that gets pulled down, because most podcasters use MP3 because it's more standardized for cross-platform. And it'll actually take those MP3 files and convert them to this bookmarkable AAC format and then load it into iTunes. Manuel wanted to let us know about a bug. Some podcasters put their podcasts out in mono format instead of stereo to save size. And apparently there's a problem with mono bookmarkable AAC files and fourth generation iPods. They actually cause the fourth generation iPods to crash. But there is a workaround, and that would be if you know that the podcast you're listening to is in mono, once it's been converted to a mono bookmarkable AAC file, you can use iTunes and re-encode that into a stereo AAC file, and then you'll be fine. Luckily for everyone, the Maccast has been put out in stereo, so you shouldn't have a problem with the Maccast in terms of bookmarkable AAC files. But if you own a fourth generation iPod, just something to be aware of. And I thank Manuel for letting us know about that. I do have a link to a thread on Apple's discussion forums if you want to find out more about it. And it's in the show notes. All right, that's the show for tonight. As always, there's a ton of ways you can get in contact with the Maccast. We have a new audio web blog, mcfeedback.blogspot.com. Over there, there's instructions. You can call in, leave a voicemail or a question, and we'll automatically post to that website for anybody to listen to. And I encourage everybody to visit that site. And if you see an audio or listen to an audio comment and you have an answer for somebody, go ahead and use the comments area on that blog, to give your response. You can always send email, maccast@gmail.com, either an MP3 audio comment or just a text email. And you can call the regular voicemail hotline, 206-222-2788. That's 20-MACCAST-8, very easy to remember. And that will go directly to my email, and I can respond to that on the show. All right, I have new music that I found over on garageband.com. It's from the Stone Melodies. The track is called This I Know. And you can visit them on their official band website, stonemelodies.com. If you like the music, please purchase a CD and let them know you heard about them on the Maccast. And that's it. All right. I hope everybody has a good evening or morning or whatever time you're listening to this show. And I will see you all next time. Gives us room to